This is Minor Revisions, a podcast from the editors of the journal Politics and Space, published by Sage. I'm Eugene McCann, Managing Editor and Professor of Geography at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, Canada, on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Each episode of Minor Revisions features the authors of a published article unpacking their publication and revealing some secrets behind it. They tell stories of how their article came about, how they collaborated with editors and reviewers to write it, what decisions they made about literatures to draw upon, and what challenges they overcame along the way. The podcast provides personal insight into the often mysterious process of publishing academic articles. We hope it will help you publish your research with only minor revisions. In this episode, Gabrielle Silvestre, a lecturer in urban planning at Newcastle University in England, and Guillermo Jaramovich, an adjunct researcher at the University of Buenos Aires in Argentina, tell the inside story of researching, writing, and publishing their article, The Afterlives of Urban Megaprojects, Grounding Policy Models and Recirculating Knowledge Through Domestic Networks. The article was published in 2022 in Volume 40, Issue 7 of Politics and Space. It is open access on the journal's website via the link in the episode's show notes. The article addresses how globally circulating policy innovations that first manifest in global cities subsequently influence other cities in the same country. The authors analyse this politics of knowledge circulation through the case of large-scale urban waterfront regeneration projects in Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro. They explore the influence of these models on other projects elsewhere in Argentina and Brazil. They argue that the attention to the reformatting and mutation of megaprojects down the urban hierarchy reveals the need to think beyond global-local dichotomies toward multi-scalar accounts of knowledge production. In this episode, we hear about the nature of their collaboration, the writing strategies they use, and their thoughts about contributing Latin American insights to the global urban studies literature. They also discuss how they decide which journal to submit their paper to, how they handle the ups and downs of the review process, and their thoughts on negotiating across languages, Spanish, Portuguese, English, and across different publishing cultures and scholarly traditions.
I am Gabrielle Silvestre. I am a lecturer in urban planning at Newcastle University in the UK. So I am at the School of Architecture, Planning and Landscape. In terms of research interests, I think I'm broadly interested on the topics of urban politics, governance, and the role of knowledge in policymaking. So basically, I want to pay attention to how different actors and groups, they try to influence urban policies by promoting certain ideas, agendas, and you know, their strategies in trying to make this happen. So Guillermo and I, we got to meet each other a while ago, I think about some 7 years ago. We came across each other's research, and then we could find lots of similarities in what we were doing. Then we approached each other to start a conversation about the kind of work we were doing. And yeah, and actually, this conversation is still on after all this time, and managed to find several opportunities to collaborate, to present together, and also to try to apply for grants as well.
Yes, well, my name is Guillermo Jaramovich. I live and work in Buenos Aires. I am an adjunct researcher at the University of Buenos Aires. I just finished like a coordination of special group on circulation of knowledge and urban policies at the Latin American Council of Social Sciences. In Spanish, it's called CLACSO. It's very well known in Latin America. I teach undergraduate courses mostly on urban culture at the Torquato Di Tella University. And I'm focusing on urban policy circulation, mega projects, and also in discussions about just cities. I've been working from a lot of years to now on urban policy circulation processes on mega projects, and especially on some relations between Spanish experts and Latin American experts. In that way, as Gabriel said before, I knew that he was working on similar issues, the same Spanish experts, but considering Rio de Janeiro, and I was considering Buenos Aires. So we meet each other, and we are working together since many years ago, and the EPC paper is part of our collaboration. Yes.
This paper looks at what happens with the knowledge that is generated in delivering mega projects after their implementation. So just to clarify, so mega projects are large-scale regeneration programs, usually of brownfield sites, so railway lands, docklands areas, areas of former industrial use. And these kind of projects, they involve large amounts of funding, or they lead to changes in the planning regulation, as well as new configurations of relations between the public and the private sector. This has become a popular approach of urban development in many cities around the world. And we can see how certain experiences have become important references for others to try to replicate. Sometimes it could be about the architecture or the urban design that it was used, or the funding mechanisms for the project to come about, or the institutional design, the infrastructure, and so on. And the regeneration of waterfront areas, which is the focus of the mega projects we look at this paper, is a quite popular approach, right? And places, for instance, like Barcelona or London, Vancouver, Cape Town, and Buenos Aires, they are often quoted as, you know, as achievements in this kind of approach to large-scale urban development or large-scale urban intervention. In this paper, we wanted to examine what happens after a mega project is delivered. So especially the strategies of those actors who once were at the demand side of mobilizing policy knowledge from other places. So those who were presented as trying to replicate or try to reproduce what projects elsewhere achieved. And we could find in our separate projects, as Guillermo already introduced, that Guillermo was working on the waterfront regeneration of Buenos Aires, the Puerto Madero project. And I was working on Puerto Maravilla, which is the waterfront regeneration in Rio. So both cities in South America. And we wanted to look at how some of these actors, they switched their position to become now suppliers of knowledge after these two projects were at least implemented. So particularly within the boundaries of Argentina and Brazil, but not only. So this kind of actors started to circulate, but we paid more attention to their circulation within their countries. So how do these models of urban regeneration change as they were promoted to other nearby cities? Often these are smaller ones and very often with less resources than the capital city of Buenos Aires or a very important city as in case of Rio. And what a focus on actors moving this knowledge around could tell us in terms of the urban politics being promoted. So in the Buenos Aires case, so we focus on the development authority of the Docklands in that area. And in the case of Rio, we focus more on the construction companies that were part of the public-private partnership. And we contrasted their practices and motivations. We argue that the circulation of the regeneration models served both to open new opportunities for those actors, as well as to legitimize what they have done before as a successful policy. So it was a strategy going into two directions. And we could find that there was also some differences in the approaches between these two sets of actors that in the paper, we suggest that we should understand them as either as policy brokers, particularly when they work more as consultants, which is the case of the Buenos Aires experts, or as policy entrepreneurs, when they actively lobby, sometimes financially, sometimes bribing, as we could find in the case of Rio, for new projects to happen on the back of what was done before.
Our collaboration began before the EPC journal. We were able to publish a paper in Urban Studies before and focused on the local uses of mobile policies in Rio de Janeiro and Buenos Aires. So we were like concerned about relationality, but also territoriality, on movement, but also on fixation. And that was related also to the Latin American context in relation to see how demand is not passive, it is active, it is selective, local actors also in Latin America are at the same time translocal actors because they have their networks, they know what is being done in many places. So in that sense, the EPC paper is the second part of our reflection on the demand side of the policy mobility process. And also, as mentioned by Gabriel, in this case, we wanted also to incorporate a temporality perspective, a historical perspective, in order to see how stakeholders switch their position. Today, they are the demanders. Tomorrow, they are the offer. And also, we wanted to take part in an ongoing conversation about the geographies that are being explored in order to do theorization on policy mobilities. In that sense, we thought that Latin America could be also a point of departure to continue thinking. We know perfectly that in theoretical terms, policy mobilities literature understand the multidirectional flow of ideas, policy models, etc. But we thought that it was still more focused on north-north circuits or north-south circuits. So we thought that we could be part of that conversation. We also wanted to stress something that obviously policy mobility literature understand, but do not focus a lot on the issue of national scales mobilities. In that sense, we wanted to see how Buenos Aires and Rio examples became a template for other cities in the national context. And then obviously we also wanted to discuss something quite different in order to avoid a romantic perspective on south-south circuits. We do not want to say, okay, this is alternative, contra-hegemonic, decolonial. No, this is also as neoliberal, if we use that category, as many other mega projects, but at the same time, it allows us to discuss different circuits. And then as Gabriel told you before, I think that there's a temporality issue on seeing not just the arrival of certain policies, but also its implementation, territorialization, and then again, a new round of mobilization in different scales. So I think that's the kind of academic conversations we wanted to be part of. I don't know if Gabriel want to add something else on that, but...
Yeah, perhaps just to stress the point, I think it came clear in our interventions before. So the paper is not the product of a project that was conceptualized beforehand as being comparative. So both of us were engaged in our own projects, completed at different times as well. But what attracted both of us to start all these discussions and this exchange was to see some similarities. There was quite a lot of differences as well, but it was the similarities that attracted and facilitated these conversations to happen at the first time. And in this paper, the way we found a structure, a design that could really work for both of us was to focus on the processes rather than the outcomes of both projects, so rather than say, okay, this is what was achieved here, this is what was achieved there. I think we could facilitate a more comparative analysis. And then we try to do this in the structure of the paper by focusing on processes, right? So let's look at actors. So we are seeing that these projects are entering into a new round of circulation. So how we can design a comparative framework where we could see, okay, so what happened next? So what kind of actors, what they did after that? And what this tell us in terms of the impact on local urban policies and the politics of the respective countries? So this was the rationale behind the structure that we gave in the paper.
In fact, I think that we had also an issue in relation to Buenos Aires and Puerto Madero was also a reference for Rio de Janeiro. So we have like a mix of comparison and comparing relational processes, but also both cases were related to each other. But as Gabriel told you before, we weren't comparing cities, we weren't comparing projects, we was comparing like recirculation processes in national scales. That was the way we tried to organize the paper. We thought a lot about how to do comparison, considering that it was not the original plan of our research, but it was a possibility that was open when we meet each other. We didn't start together a research seeing the same things. We started with our research almost finished, but we saw that we could start to start a conversation, see similarities, and the possibility to start to see something different in each case, something different than when we work alone. And that's maybe related to another issue of working together, working with another person, yes. If you want, Gabriel, I can continue or you can...
Yeah, well, I can add the how was the process first in, yes, in getting this together, and then I can move into a wider consideration about, you know, working together and so on. So, yeah, well, as you mentioned before, Guillermo mentioned, so this paper is the product of a long time conversation we were having, some work we've done before. So it became natural for us after each publication to consider, for instance, what other sort of work we could work together on. In the process of writing a paper, there's also other ideas, spin-offs, things that happen that we try to take notes and leave a store somewhere to revisit at another time. So work that sometimes is discarded as we put a paper together that could eventually lead to another idea. So this was always saved for future reference. So in terms of this particular paper, I think this is the strategy we have used for the others as well. So one of us then have a go at elaborating the core idea behind the paper or the publication. And then we propose a particular structure for, you know, how the paper, how the idea could be organized. And this we'll then share in an online document. And it's kind of developed from there. So each of us will add content to each section, we'll post comments, you know, exchange new literature or revisit some previous literature that sometimes might have been overlooked. Then with the joys of online working, so we organize, you know, chats online to refine the ideas and then decide who we could share the draft with, where we could possibly present. I'm not sure how many opportunities we had, a few only, to present together, but most often we will then present in different places. And then until we manage to get to a decent draft. So I think this is part of the process of this paper, but I think it also applies to some other work.
I think in this case, specifically in co-working with Gabriel, doing co-authorship was like very productive. It does not always work in the same sense with other people. You know, you make a relation at the end of the day. But I think that among other issues, at least for me, it allowed me to produce a more global research because we are like taking into account more cases, broader geographies, more circuits, and more stakeholders. So co-authorship also allow us to think bigger and think in a broader way. At the same time, we started to think about the possibility of comparing different policy mobility processes. So the idea was to start to think together around comparison and circulation. So to compare different circulations. We had like the same Spanish experts, but those circulations in Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro were different. And also they were different inside Brazil and inside Argentina. So working together allowed us to start to think more about a comparison. And as we said before, that was not our original plan when working alone. It was like something that started when we start to dialogue together. And at the same time, I think this is quite important, the processes that we researched before started to mean something different when it is put in conversation with another case. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, maybe it's also co-authorship, a way of thinking, in this case, on comparative urbanism. How can we do it, etc. And with Gabriel, I cannot mention like bad experiences or bad issues, but I would say in general for others that it is important perhaps to know that co-authors not always will be working at the same time and at the same speed in the whole process. So you have to try to understand the other and try to collaborate with the other. Also, when you have a family, you know, there are like many issues that can stop you, et cetera, et cetera. But In this case with Gabriel, we started like many years ago, and I hope we continue for a long time, like working, discussing together. For me, it's really like a pleasure.
Yeah, well, I think we managed to do something quite unique, I would say. So we managed to get a Brazilian and an Argentina to work together on a comparative project about their own countries, and we managed to agree with our findings. So I think this may be a first. Yeah, prior to the submission to PC, so we circulated the draft with other colleagues and shared also ideas about potential journals. And from a particular point when the draft started to get into shape, this is when we believed that EPC would be a suitable journal for the kind of discussions that we are leading, especially as we were emphasizing a focus on the politics in production of space. And we also considered that a number of references that we were working on this particular paper was drawing, for instance, as I mentioned, from policy mobilities, from mega projects, but also from policy analysis as well that were published in EPC. So it started to make sense that this would then be the right journal to submit. And how exactly do we know which journal to submit according to each idea? It's perhaps not so clear. I would say there's a bit of intuition in that. So for me, it started to came about when I started to pay more attention, for instance, where certain papers were published before. So the kind of journals where each paper is published. And this was when I started to engage in greater depth, for instance, during doing my PhD. So this is when you start to see some nuances in editorial approaches between journals. Yeah, so this nuance starts to become more visible. And I think it really, you learn more as you start to submit papers, you get rejections, and then always the challenge of not taking this personally, but really understand that maybe that particular journal was not the right one for that take on the idea. And also when you start to be invited to provide peer review for submissions as well. So then you move to the other side of the table and then say, oh, okay, right. So I can see more of the kind of submissions that this particular journal receives. And this also helps you to inform what would be the most adequate journal for each paper, for each discussion that you are developing.
I think in general, in the same way as Gabriel, we had like another collaboration where we focus a lot on the case, on giving historical information. But we knew that if we focus on the theoretical discussion, we should see like journals related to the discussions we want to be part. So in this case, the editor, many papers published there. Also at the same time, seeing what we are actually quoting, where it was published. And in that vein, we started to select the proper journal. In this case, it worked okay or more than okay. But at the same time, like if I am writing a paper for a Latin American magazine or journal, there are many things that I do not need to explain. Where is Buenos Aires? What is Puerto Madero? And in this case, we have to explain or explicit a lot of issues that are like very well known in Latin America, but at the same time, the journal is not asking just for information. It's asking for a good theoretical discussion and contribution. So at the same time, we have to like do those two things at the same time, give information to people that do not know our cities, but to engage in a discussion that can be of interest for someone that do not know if Buenos Aires is the capital of Peru, Santiago de Chile, etc. You know, it's you do not need to be like from Buenos Aires to understand our contribution. That was the idea. Gabriel is working in the UK since a long time ago. I'm working in Buenos Aires again since a long time ago. So I can see at the same time the different publishing cultures that you mentioned before. In my case, for me, it's an interesting experiment in order to be at the two worlds at the same time and try to like foster discussions internationally and also like in a more rational way and try to make connections between those two worlds. And I am in the middle of that. I don't know where I will end, but I think it's productive in order to Okay, well, we are speaking about policy mobilities. Okay, let's speak about our mobilities as researchers. The words, the academic words that we take part, the language issues, like there are many things also to be able to, let's say, decenter ourselves. No, I live in Argentina, but if we think everything in relational and territorial perspectives, well, okay, let's think about that. How can we contribute from cases in Latin America? And our contribution do not try to, okay, let's explain to others how Argentina or Brazil is. No, okay, let's engage in an ongoing conversation. And also let's try to make our colleagues engage in these conversations. Let's help them, as many others help us, to be part of these conversations and take into account things that one can understand it when it's involved. The time you need, the possible rejections, the writing issue, the language problems. Okay, there are like many things in order to reflect, I think. So, but it's an interesting experiment, let's say, in that way.
In this paper, it was quite positive, I would say. I think we had two rounds of review, so the corrections were not as extensive. So part of it may be how we incorporated a pre-review process prior to the submission by sharing with other colleagues, by making use of conferences. We were quite fortunate to participate in a small seminar. It was an online seminar where we first presented the draft of this paper with a group of other colleagues interested in discussions about circulations. That was more focused on planning, so circulations of planning practices and policies within the Global South. So it was organized in Delft, but it was online. And we shared the draft among ourselves before we had a discussion. So each of the participants would act as a discussant to someone else's paper. So it was a very supportive. So I think part of the very positive review process was all the work that was done before the submission as well. Yeah, from this perspective, I think Guillermo also, I want to add something.
No, something very short. In the case that we, when we presented this, a previous version of this paper in that conference, the paper was like almost finished. So we didn't have in that occasion a lot of feedback because it was almost like closed. But I think that small seminars, also informal seminars, informal discussions can help the authors a lot. And we focus after the review on answering exactly and clearly what we were being asked to do. That's not a secret, but many times people do not work in that way. But we, in this case, as the answer, the initial review was like very good, it was not a problem. In other cases, maybe you have like a review and you don't know if the problem is your paper or the problem is the reviewer or both things at the same time. Yeah. But in this case, it was a good review and we focused exactly on answer what we were being asked to. And we also agree on many comments. So I can remember one comment in particular that ask us to read some literature on Asian cases. And that was also interesting for us in order to, okay, we're working in Latin America and let's see what is happening in other geographies. Maybe like the label Global South, it's like problematic, it can be discussed, but okay, let's see what people is doing in another continent. No? So they ask us for give more empirical details. Maybe for a different audience, that was not necessary. But in this case, it was okay. And also for specific precisions. For example, what is moving in your argument? Is knowledge, is mega project? They ask us for be more clear on that. And I think that we tried to do it. And obviously, we managed to do it. If not, we will not be talking here with you.
But, no, but on and off, the reviewing process really helped to refine and strengthen the arguments, I think. So each reviewer will pay attention to different things, but all in all, I think that there was a positive reception at first. Some would require more attention to particular issues, and it's always a challenge to how you strike a balance between the empirical detail, but at the same time, how exactly your paper is advancing some kind of a more theoretical contribution to the bodies of literature that you were drawing on. Yeah, so it's about, as Guillermo said, so trying to be specific in your response. Sometimes when you don't agree, it's okay, but to explain why, and this also helps to make your argument clearer. So because then you need to incorporate this in your paper to say, okay, so I'm not going into this direction because it's not the kind of discussion that we are interested to enter into in this paper. So our contribution is more toward this other approach, let's say. So I think it was a very helpful reviewing process, and we were happy with the end result. There's also the learning process as you start to submit your papers. Yeah, definitely one such learning was to some comments we made earlier about being really clear how you were addressing each specific comment. There were cases before in all the submissions that it took longer because then a particular reviewer was not happy saying that his comments were not addressed, but we assumed that there was already a similar issue being appointed by another reviewer, so we kind of addressed everything together. So we tried to be very explicit. So let's say normally the way we work is when we receive the feedback, then we make a table to really separate each specific comment and being clear about, okay, so in response to this comment, we are doing these changes, and these changes can be found on this specific page, this specific paragraph, or add further references. So the learning process was to be more and more specific. And I also think it's also a way to be grateful for the reviewing process as well. So both of us are also actively involved in peer review as well. So we want to see that, you know, our comments are taken on, that, you know, there is a perspective that is to be constructive to that. So it is fine to disagree, but as long as you could see that it was received, it was considered, and there are reasons for that. So yeah, specifically from my point of view, is the learning process was to really be explicit, and there's always the issue of not taking things personally at first. So it's good, as you mentioned, you receive the feedback, you leave for a while, and then you revisit. I think working in co-authorship is helpful because sometimes if one of us is unhappy with a particular comment, the other say, well, you know, but there's the other side, look at the other comments. So there's a way that it's also beneficial to be working together.
Yes, I think that the key is to understand it as a learning opportunity. It's easier to think it out in that way when the paper is accepted, obviously, no? But I think that there are rational issues and also emotional issues. When it takes a lot of time, I have colleagues telling me, oh no, I want to take the paper out, send it to another journal. It's a long time. I don't like the comments. I've been there. So in some way, I think that patience, it's really important. Working together is easier in order to, well, if one is burned, the other one can say, okay, maybe this is a key for another paper. In that way, at the same time, if patience is important, anxiety is your main enemy. No, you have to fight against that in order to, you have to know that many journals are receiving a lot of papers. Many reviewers are reviewing at the same time many papers. So at the end of the day, you are not so important as an individual. You are part of a broader community, let's put it in those terms. But I think one of the keys in order to have a better submission is to work a lot before, to discuss the paper or the draft with colleagues in seminars, informal or informal ways, in order to have the more complete submission that you can get. So the problems can be seen before and not to get a rejection in the first time. Obviously, we need to be open to criticism, although sometimes reviewers can be not so mean. But I think that ask changes can be important for the paper. There are many jokes that at the end of the day, the paper is like Frankenstein, no? Because it's a mix of different parts that were asked by one reviewer and then the other. But at the end of the day, I think that if the final paper is different from the beginning, maybe, well, it's part of the process and you are getting something new. You are like changing yourself, changing the paper, and also trying to see in each time how this works. No, every time you have to be patient, fight against anxiety, understand that times can be longer. So you do not learn this one time and forever. In every occasion, you have to, okay, let's do yoga or what you want to do, no? But okay, let's try to get the best of this. Also, senior scholars are like rejected or get reviews like really tough. So if we consider that we are still young, if we are, I don't know, we have to understand the process and how it can affect us, yes.
I don't think we had a major issue being non-native speakers, as we was already mentioned. Well, I've been in the UK for a while and Guillermo is fluent, and both of us are used to, you know, be engaging with literature in English and some of the conventions of the, let's call it, Anglo-Saxon academia for the sake of it. But it's also true that, you know, the Latin languages that we speak find their way in our writing and your way of thinking. And I think by sharing drafts with native speakers as part of a long-term sort of exchange as well, it's important and it's helpful to improve the quality of the paper. And also there is a process of endless proofreading that we do. And another good benefit of co-authorship is then you have another pair of eyes to go through the proofreading. Yeah, well, in terms of culture, I think that journals are now, journals published in English are becoming more open to work that draws on bodies of literature written in other languages, which I think was something that was not very open before. So I remember being in workshops about experiences in publishing where, you know, you had the kind of comments from reviewers saying that if I can't read your references, it means that it's not useful for being published in this journal. So unless you publish in a language that is accessible to everyone, saying that it should be in English, it shouldn't be considered in the paper. But I think we are moving on from this. Yeah, in this paper in particular, we are not so explicit with engagement with literature beyond, you know, English references, but we have done this in other papers. And I think that this just enriches the academic debates and hopefully also instigates people to venture into other languages and to venture into other work. But it is something that we are conscious about, and especially because we publish in different languages. So we publish in English, but also in Spanish, in Portuguese, and there are different takes within each academic culture. So definitely, I mean, there are approaches where essentially you have to be more objective from the very beginning and be clear that, you know, there's one particular contribution of this paper, whereas some others, you know, it's more open for more extensive considerations and more effort needs to be done into the contextualization of the arguments. So sometimes that there's more space for being descriptive, let's say, or more space to be more empirical. So it is a challenge, but we are conscious, and it is in this process of publishing in different academic cultures that help us to understand the differences. And at the same time, point, you know, how it's possible to bridge some of them, it's possible, Molchanov's being open to say, actually, you advance discussion by saying, I'm bringing this body of literature that has been predominantly written in this particular language. And this is exactly what we may need in this particular discussion within this literature, because there's something, there's an opportunity, a gap there that enables this conversation. So I think this is really advanced from, I would say, perhaps 10 years ago. And we are seeing more translations of work, more interest in thinkers from other traditions. So, yeah, so it's, I think it's about learning this process of going through different academic cultures and understanding the different needs and the different approaches.
Yes, for me, I'm still learning on writing, discussing, debating in English. Some time ago, someone told me, like, permanent professors in the US were still sending their papers to native speakers. So I realized that it won't end. It's like a permanent reflection and practice on how to write. And at the same time, I think that we are like focused on different cultures at the same time. I do not want to do like a dichotomy, but we are seeing like the international discussion, but we are also in a discussion or in a conversation with Brazilian or Latin American scholars on these issues, also with people that do not want to publish in English. So we have like a kind of a healthy schizophrenia in order to see both worlds at the same time. We want to take part in both discussions. And we are like reading in Spanish, in English, in Portuguese, obviously, and everything that it's a kind of information for our reflection. But I think it's an issue because as a Spanish native speaker, the way of writing, it's quite different. And I like to write in Spanish. I can't say that I like to write in English. It's not my word. But in Spanish, you have the risk of putting more and more words to say something that it might be said in an easier way. But in English, you have to deal with that. Erase every extra word, be clear. And in Spanish or Portuguese, well, okay, the sound of the words, the sentence, literary quotes. So there are like many issues that the writing goes away from you. But in English, well, it's like, in my case, I need like discipline. Okay, no, this extra word should go away. But when I am writing in Spanish, it's okay, let's write. Let's see what happens. When I write in Spanish, it's different in English. Okay, every paragraph has to have a main idea. In Spanish, I don't know if I am so disciplined on that, but for me, it's like a learning experience again, yes. I have some advice. Maybe Gabriel can add others. I think that there are many things that we said before, but I think it's okay to say it again. First of all, I think that ideas should be tested before sending the paper to a journal. It had to be part of a conversation that starts before the submission. Then also, the journal should be decided before starting to write a manuscript in order to see in what discussion you are engaged and not finishing the paper and then say, okay, where can I send this? No, it's better if you decide that from the beginning. Then if you do not know where to send your manuscript, you might see what you are actually quoting in your paper and the journals where those papers come from. So that can give you like an idea of the appropriate place to send your paper. Then if you are not a native speaker, and if you are a native speaker also, the manuscript should be read by a senior academic or a native speaker in order to test it, to see how it is read. In general, I think that the problem is not the reviewer, the problem is on the text. Okay, we have cases where the reviewers are really hard, but the problem is how it is understood by others. And if others do not understand, we have to work again on the text. Then I think it's important to be like open to criticism before and after sending the manuscript, to realize that you have to defend your ideas, but also to be open to critics, and after those critics, to change parts of your text. It's a text, it's not so personal, or it should not be personal. Then, as I said before, after sending the paper, patience have to be your strength, because the evaluation time might be longer than expected. I think that informally, you can get some information about, okay, this journal might take 2 years at least. In any case, patience is like really important. And also try to understand all the process as a learning experience. This is easier to say when the paper is accepted, but in any case, it can be a learning experience in order to get a better paper and also on your career. And then again, avoid anxiety because times are longer than expected. So I think those are like general advices to consider. We know that then we get a review that we do not like and we are not so patient. No? We have like other emotions. But I think that in general, it's important to understand these issues. In our case, then we had like a more historical narrative on similar issues, and we decided to send a submission to a more like a planning history journal, because we realized that we also wanted to be part of that conversation and bridge conversations between different discipline journals. But okay, the problem is, if you send a historical narrative to a geography journal and the geography narrative to a historical journal, you have to see the right argument for the right journal. Let's put it in those terms. I don't know, Gabriel, if you want to add something.
Yeah, well, in terms of advice, and especially for authors, at the beginning of the process of publishing and trying to reach a wider audience, yeah, I'd say that some of the things we already touched on are really important, which is to understand that there are differences in terms of publishing cultures, or academic and publishing cultures. So learning, not taking personally rejection of things, but it really start to understand that in particular outlets, you have to publish in a certain way. And obviously, as you already mentioned, that journals have different focus. So it's really about receiving rejection in a way that you need to learn from that, okay, so what exactly is the focus of that particular journal, how I can learn from it? And I think one important point that we didn't discuss much, but I remember seeing this before, and I've seen these comments coming from editors as well, that sometimes that there are some really good papers with a lot of potential, but more attention is given to the empirical of, you know, really sharing the research that was done, with less attention about the theoretical contribution on how exactly this particular, it might be a great story, but where exactly this paper, how it contributes to advanced discussion, to advanced contribution to knowledge. And it's still, I think this is not entirely clear to many, you know, young scholars starting, because you come out of PhD usually with a very interesting case, lots of details, you want to share that, but you need to be clear. And this was something that we could learn from the process of publishing together in two cases. It's already difficult. One case, in our case, we are always working comparatively. So it was always a challenge. So being able to learn that you need to strike a balance between theory and the empirical part is important. And saying that, I think there was another issue to do that we learned in the process of working together, which is how journals are requiring more and more for you to be very straightforward about the contribution you are doing. And this also leads to the kind of writing you do in some parts of the paper, where you can take a first person, you know, to say, okay, this is our contribution. We need to be very straightforward about this. And I think it also helps us to be confident about, okay, this is the place of the paper in this conversation, right? So it's about signposting this very clearly. And it's something that it's not always the case or well received in different cultures that you might have, that this is not the way to go forward. So it's about learning that, okay, if you venture into another language or another academic culture, there are some conventions beyond just the quality of writing, but the style of writing, the style of arguments, of contribution of your paper, it's also important. I believe we see this paper as part of a collective effort in furthering understanding and the analysis of policy circulation, especially with our focus more on the regional secrets of exchanges, and also by looking into cities of the global south. I think that we both, you know, it expands the geographical focus, is something that Guillermo mentioned, but also challenge some of this romanticization that might exist between south-south exchanges. And hopefully this body of literature is adding a more critical perspective when claims to reproduce particular policy models are presented. So we can see this is the very stuff of politics. And we can see this all the time, you know, policymakers pointing that, okay, so if we reach this point of things not progressing, let's learn from that particular, look at what another city, another country is doing. There's a lot to learn from that. So this is the kind of bread and butter of politics. But I think this body of literature that we find ourselves being part of is helping to add more of a critical understanding of this and to try to challenge when these claims are presented. But I think that we also realize, and speaking for Guillermo and myself, that it's also necessary to better understand how alternative and counter-hegemonic knowledge also circulate. So then there is a lot of work to be done to understand, you know, the possibilities for more emancipatory urban change and how different knowledges can also be influential in making policy change. So we are kind of moving a little bit from the ideas that we presented in that paper to try to go into this direction and see where it could take us. I think we, with so much going on around the world in this post-pandemic period, trying to be positive that they, you know, they are very, we are in a creative moment of trying to seek alternative directions, consider all the challenges, global challenges around us, and that some very different approaches to policy, it's also important.
Yeah, I think that we are in the middle of a tension because we try to avoid the romanticization of south-south circuits, as said before, but at the same time, we realize that if we overemphasize the visibility of hegemonic policies, then alternatives are nowhere. And we know that there's a long way between academic pieces and political discussions, but we're trying to go in that direction also to avoid a romanticization of alternative circuits, maybe to explore some similarities between alternative and hegemonic ways of doing like policy circulation, because what we are seeing is that like similar references are being moved by really different stakeholders. So I think that we might try to go in that direction, but also avoiding a romantic perspective. And nowadays there are like many examples in Latin America in order to see these processes. Also, again, in relation to some example of Spanish politics, from Spain, sorry, because again, like we also can like reinforce a historical perspective in order to make a broader dialogue between geography, history, policy, mobility, circulation, because we are seeing like processes from the 70s or 80s to nowadays. So at the end of the day, also Barcelona is still a reference in America Latina, but with different contents. And from the last 20 years, we have like many Latin American example reference models that are being part of the political conversation. But at the same time, we have to avoid a romantic perspective because in many cases, there are like many networks and institutions from the global north that are moving the Latin American experiences. So I think that there's something to understand and discuss in that direction. I think we're trying to go there. In my case, by the moment, because we are starting, it's more clear for me what I do not want to say or where do I do not want to go in this research. But it's still difficult for me to think to avoid those problems. It's not so easy to do research on something that you might like. For others, it's easier to do research on something that you do not like. You want to criticize it. But what happens when we have to do research on something that it's next to us? How do we deal with that? It's also like a methodological or also epistemological issue to take into account. But well, I think it's an interesting issue to analyze.
That's a wrap for this episode of Minor Revisions. You've been listening to Gabriel Silvestre, a lecturer in urban planning at Newcastle University in England, and Guillermo Jajamovic, an adjunct researcher at the University of Buenos Aires, Argentina. They were discussing their article, The Afterlives of Urban Megaprojects, Grounding Policy Models and Recirculating Knowledge Through Domestic Networks. The podcast is made possible with the support of Simon Fraser University's Van City Office of Community Engagement. Our theme music is by Conrad Urbaniak. Our graphic designer is Samantha Thompson. And I'm Eugene McCann. Please subscribe to Minor Revisions wherever you find your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Write a review, share with your friends and colleagues, and consider assigning episodes to your students. Politics in Space is an international journal of critical, heterodox, and interdisciplinary research into the political and the spatial, published by Sage. The journal's editors are Louisa B. Vasevich, University of Amsterdam, Patricia Daly, Oxford University, Alison Mounts, Wilfrid Laurier University, and Joe Painter, Durham University, and me. Find Politics in Space on the Sage Journal's website and follow it on Twitter at envplanc. That's at envplanc.